Yes, and we have started recording. So I give it to you, Joseph, the Las Vegas nerve.
The Las Vegas nerve. Great, thank you. Okay, guys, so welcome. Some of you have joined recently, and my name is Joseph. Most of you I know. And yeah, so the presentation, I've been asked a couple of times. I've had some discussions on the seminar in Poland when we were discussing sort of phenomena around overwhelm and lockdown and how to deal with it in a way. And in that context, I've had some conversations about, maybe a piece of theory that explains the phenomena very well and also gives us some clues in how to manage and handle it. I can understand, I suppose, in a deeper way what's going on in the physiology underneath those phenomena. So that's really the motivation, and I hope it's sort of useful and practical. Maybe if we mute, can you mute everybody actually? So, and I
Yes.
pause then for Chris, because otherwise we have a lot of noise.
Just wait a minute.
Unmute. Good. Cool. You can still hear me, yeah? Good. Great. Okay. Okay, guys. So basically, I'm gonna bring you through a little presentation, and then we just go through the systems that I'm involved, and then afterwards we have a little discussion and see how we can practically apply this sort of information. And maybe I'll pause in between just to see if we are all on board. So let me share my screen. Share screen. Chuk chuk. And where are we? Good. Can you see my screen?
Yes, perfect. Yes.
Perfect, wonderful. Okay, so the vagus nerve, basically we've been talking a lot about the stress axis of the nervous system in our training, and how to stimulate and use stress to enhance our physiology. And this in a way is the other pathway. So the nervous system has those two branches. And I'm just gonna go through the schematic first, just to refresh a few things about the nervous system. So basically, our nervous system has evolved over a long period of time, and it has evolved in the natural world. And in a way, it's responsible to keep us safe and alive, and to manage our energy metabolism. It's the main task of our nervous system. Yeah. And in a way, in this history, we were both prey and predators. So we've hunted animals for food, and we've also been hunted by animals for food. So in a way, our nervous system knows both situations, in a way. And sometimes we can identify with the terrified gazelle trying to escape its destiny, and sometimes we identify with the cheetah pursuing food for its children. So in a way, it's easy to connect with both needs, and in a way, our nervous system sort of reflects those responses. So, and all those responses in our nervous system, they sort of run in the autonomic realm. So basically, when it's about survival and the maintenance of homeostasis, it's better we don't get in the way, in a way. So there's this incredible intelligence within us, managing our energy metabolism, and regulating our physiology and maintaining homeostasis, which is really a sort of a narrow spectrum of physiological range in which life is possible, and if fine-tuned, and ideally if, well, life can thrive in a way. Like, so if the body temperature goes up by a few degrees, we perish. If it goes down by a few degrees, we perish. And the same applies for a lot of systems in our body, that there's this sort of range of modulation that's healthy and that sustains life harmoniously. And in a way, the autonomic nervous system looks after this task. And in a way, in our Wim Hof sort of training, we've talked a lot about the sympathetic nervous system and how we can use adrenaline and how we can use this stimulation to reset the nervous system and to find deeper calmness, better resilience, and all of this. But in a way, so the other branch is the parasympathetic axis, and really where we spend most of our life, hopefully, is really in this parasympathetic range. And sympathetic states, arousal states, they always have sort of short-term priorities. Upregulating the energy metabolism to get away from the tiger as quickly as possible, climb up the tree as quickly as possible, and hopefully successfully complete the task, and then downregulate and shift back into a parasympathetic domain where it's all about long-term perspectives, digesting food, storing nutrients, looking after the immune system. Everything, every question about a life well lived over a long period of time, all plays out in this parasympathetic realm. And when we're talking about the vagus nerve, this is really the parasympathetic, the predominantly the parasympathetic pathway into our viscera. And if we go back to the left side, here is the sympathetic one, and you can see down along the spine, we've got this sort of horizontal stacks of ganglia running on either side of the spine. And that is the sympathetic pathway. So when we get this boost of adrenaline, I don't know if any of you have ever noticed, there's a sort of flush of energy which we feel along the longitudinal axis of the body. And that's all those little ganglia firing up. And then they branch out into all the organ systems. So the viscera is represented in the middle. And all those little those connections, they connect to the organ systems of the body. And then on the other side, we've got the vagus nerve. And we can see here, all the whole pathway into the viscera doesn't travel down along those bilateral ganglia, but it just travels as this one big long pathway in one nerve channel and reaches into our entire viscera. So in a way, the parasympathetic control of our viscera is regulated by the vagus nerve. And let's see, next one, just go. Great. So just a little bit on the influences of the vagus nerve. So there's been a lot of research about the vagus nerve and health, really. And it's been sort of, there's a lot of research around stimulating the vagus to change depression, boost the immune system, even sort of treat epilepsy. So it's a nerve that has a huge effect on our metabolic state. So you can see here some of the influences. It suppresses inflammation, It decreases the heart rate and is responsible for the vascular tone. It increases gastric juices and gut motility and stomach acidity. So it influences our digestive processes. Yeah. It regulates insulin secretion and glucose homeostasis in the liver. So the whole sugar balance playing out through our organ system. Again, part of this energy metabolism. It also communicates taste information. It decreases vascular tone and lowers blood pressure, and it helps to keep anxiety and depression at bay. So it opposes the sympathetic response to stress. Yeah, and in a way, it's really important. So when we do our practice, when we stimulate the sympathetics, I mean, a really important feature of this exercise is that we're able to switch it off again. So we don't go into overwhelm, but we learn to turn up the volume and then learn to turn it down again, or go into the ice bath and stimulate the sympathetic response, but still at the same time toning down our activation and remaining calm in the midst of it all. And in a way, so what we're doing with our practice, really stimulating our vagal tone, so the capacity of our vagus nerve to do all those amazing things that it influences effectively. Now, what's really interesting, in a way, what's very important aspect. So basically, the vagus nerve has a direct fibers, a direct control into our heart rate. Yeah. So basically, the vagus nerve dampens and slows down our heart rate. Yeah. And in a way, there's now a lot of talk about heart rate variability. Yeah. And heart rate variability is a really important measure for health again. Yeah. So it's basically the knowledge that our heart is not a metronomic device that ticks like a clock, but it actually has to fluctuate. And this fluctuation is actually carried out by the vagus nerve. And the way it happens is when we breathe, our heart muscle stretches. So there's a decrease in blood flow. So the brain recognizes a decrease in blood flow and upregulates the cardiac output. And if we breathe out, we squish the heart a little bit because the diaphragm relaxes and the heart sits directly on the diaphragm. And the blood flow through the heart speeds up. And the brain recognizes this and compensates and lowers our heart rate in milliseconds, And this is a really important feature. So if we lose this control, basically we lose our ability to fine tune our heart and our metabolism. Yeah. And that has got something to do always with an overwhelm of the vagal break on the heart. Yeah. And in a way, it happens very frequently when we are chronically stressed. Yeah. So if we're continuously running the heart, driving the heart, eventually this break and this subtle regulation becomes overwhelmed and our heart doesn't recover as well. And it's a marker for ill health and cardiovascular disease and all sorts of bad health stories developing in our physiology. And again, the vagus nerve is key to this process of regulating the heart. If you took away the hormonal influence and the vagal regulation, our intrinsic heart rate, so the inherent rate of our heart, would go up to 100 to 110 beats per minute. So that's the natural state of our heart without this regulation. And if you can imagine, 110 beats per minute is already pretty ramped up. So for a lot of our activities, we'd feel totally over aroused to carry them out in harmony. Yeah? So that's key to good regulation, and also that's what we are using in a way when we jump into the ice bath and we feel that initial rush and then this calmness emerging. Basically, we've implemented our vagal regulation on our cardiac output and on our metabolic state. Yeah. Good. So let's go on. What's also really exciting about the vagus nerve, and it's not hasn't been known for too long, it was originally considered entirely a motor nerve regulating our viscera, but it's since been now it's known as like basically only 20% of the nerve is afferent, so it going out of the nervous system into the viscera, so motor control. 80% is sensory, like, yeah. So in our training, we talked a lot about interoception, yeah. And effectively, the big interoceptive pathway from our viscera to our brain travels through our vagus nerve, like, yeah. So it's this massive communication highway sending information from our viscera to our brain and giving us this interoceptive experience of, I need to go to the bathroom. I feel rather full. I feel hungry. I feel movements, peristalsis. So all these signals travel up through the vagus nerve. And also by practicing interoceptive awareness, we also stimulate the regulatory capacity of this pathway. So the better we feel ourselves, the more easy it is to regulate within our physiology. And all this plays out through this amazing nerve pathway. So all those, this is a study where they've looked at emotional states, and they've asked some people where they felt switched on or off. So you can already see for all those different emotional states, there's always interoceptive information switched on or off in our visceral landscape, like, yeah. And all this really comes from our vagal interoceptive pathway. Cool. These are just a few beautiful old images. So this shows a nice schematic here. So this is the sympathetic chain ganglia traveling down along the longitudinal axis and then branching out to the organs. And that's the vagus nerve creating this amazing web of branching into all the visceral landscapes in our body. Cool. So again, in this sympathetic and parasympathetic domain, so the autonomic nervous system, for a long time it was considered to be a sort of a dual system, yeah. So the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, yeah, as two branches of this network. And this is just an image, like, of this a metaphor for those two poles. So the sympathetic is the accelerator pedal, and the parasympathetic is the brake pedal in a way, like, yeah. And key is really balance, yeah. So when those systems get out of sync, it's very difficult to regulate because they've got a huge investment in our energy metabolism, like, yeah. And if we become overwhelmed in the sympathetic direction, in a way the fires aren't too much, we become hyper aroused, like, yeah. And if we become over or under stimulated in the parasympathetic direction, we can enter freeze or tonic immobile states, like, yeah. So basically, in the extreme, we are either fired up too much or frozen, and in a way, that's usually what happens when we become traumatized. So trauma states usually induce this overwhelmed state of our autonomic responses. And we can be triggered between hyperarousal and tonic immobility, so numb states. And there's a huge cost to this, like, yeah, and especially if those systems are out of sync with environmental needs, like, yeah. So if it's basically a misinterpretation of the environment and those responses sort of triggered by stimuli that remind us of past experience and that are not really in sync with what's actually happening in the world. So neutral events become triggers for those overwhelmed responses. And for a long time, this model was the only sort of representation. And then along came a new theory, like, because basically that model really doesn't show how we can regulate so smoothly in our social mode, like, and basically a new model was developed, and it's basically called the polyvagal theory, and the social nervous system, yeah. And there was a researcher called Borges, or is a researcher, so he's done a lot of work on the theory, and he also has a practical application helping autistic children and children with difficulty through stimulation of certain nerve pathways to regulate better, like, yeah. And this is really a nice model that allows us to understand the complexity of our life situations. Like, yeah. So it's not just about upregulation and downregulation, yeah, which in nature always happens in response to threat. And we use those systems for our leisure to stimulate us. And in an ideal mode, like, we can downregulate our physiology and go into rest states, repair, rejuvenation, meditation, and sleep. On the other side, if we become overwhelmed by unsafe events, we can go into freeze, collapse, dissociation, shock, and faint. Like, yeah. And the same, we can use our sympathetic axis for work, sport, yoga, dance, sex, art, or we can use it to run for life when we become threatened, like, yeah. And really on top of those systems is this very elegant social networking system, which allows us to maintain a healthy baseline, yeah. And we've talked about the vagus. The reason why it's called the polyvagal theory is that the vagus actually in this model has two branches. Like, so there's an old one, which is basically responsible for those visceral regulations and effectively the freeze response. And we have a new one, which has evolved a lot later in the evolutionary history, which allowed us to sort of cohere in large social environments. And it's a very sophisticated relationship between the vagus nerve and then also a lot of other neurology that we use to that we use for social expression and mirroring, like, yeah. So let's look at this. And this is the model. So Borges, the researcher, and his view of the autonomic nervous system. So basically, in safety, we use a certain pathway, which allows us to be regulated, relaxed, connected, engaged. We are open to learn, attend, solve problems. We breathe deeply, our heart rate is slowed down, and we communicate well. Now in danger, the sympathetic axis becomes activated, and this is really what I've been talking about, the break, the vagal break on our heart. At some stage, if we become triggered beyond a certain threshold, and it's different for everybody, so if we are squeezed hard enough, all of us will run those response patterns, because they're programmed into our biology, and it's just a matter of how well can I regulate in the midst of intense stimuli. But if the stimuli gets too much, we all revert to those overwhelmed states, and in response to danger, a sympathetic nervous system kicks in, runs its fight flight button, hyper arouses us, gets us ready to move away from what we perceive as dangerous. We breathe faster, the blood pressure increases. If it goes up too much, we get into dissociative rage, panic, and all those other states that come with it. And then when there's when that system becomes overwhelmed, so when the nervous system decides, okay, I cannot escape anymore, basically the nervous system shuts down and it runs this freeze response and uses this old vagus to shut down the body physiology into immobilization, survival state. We become shameful, hopeless, overwhelmed, hypo-aroused, maybe depressed, a dissociated collapse, a shutdown, a freeze response. And in a way, this is a really nice model to understand, how to maintain this safety system, and then also how to interact with states that bring us into overwhelmed states, or also to help our clients to come out of overwhelmed states if it happens in our workshops, for example. This is a nice, what's really important to know, and just maybe particularly in this context of freeze, or shutdown that we talked about, in the workshops, So in a way, if you look at this, so basically this is the baseline, and this is the domain of our social vagal pathway in a way, So we are open, joyful, in the present, grounded, curious. There's many possibilities, it increases our digestive processes, our immune responses, our rest and recuperation, the circulation to non-vital organs like the skin, the extremities. And it uses oxytocin, which is a neuromodulator involved in social bonds, that allows us to be immobile without fear. So at rest in a way, And it gives us the ability to relate and to connect, So then if we push up the activation, so the trigger, this is the trigger line. So in a way, the first sign may just be a sign of worry, concern, frustration. And again, this is the flight, this is the fight pathway. If the volume knob goes up further, we become anxious and irritated. If it goes up even more, fearful, panicky, enraged, So at this stage, if I'm in fight mode, I may experience a rage attack, On the other hand, if I'm in flight mode, I may be experiencing a panic attack. Yeah. So it's basically a state of being where the spectrum of possibilities narrows down to very simple, basic survival reflexes, like finding that one escape route that's available, becoming as strong as possible, but at loss of perceptual orientation and ability to connect. Yeah. So in a way, we become more and more lonely in our task to survive, in a way. And then there's a threshold, and this is really the threshold where the nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system, kicks in. And I like this one, this model, because often it's sort of shown downwards because it is opposing, yeah. But here it's shown on top of the fight flight response, yeah. So when this threshold comes, the basic life statement is I can't deal with it anymore. There may be a feeling of helplessness, depression, numbness, dissociation, shame, or just a shutdown, a physiological shutdown, like the one we've been describing in our, or we've been sort of working in our Wim Hof model, like, yeah. So this is the last line of defense. That's not a great place to hang out in a way, like, yeah. Even though it may feel like a euphoric state, there are no possibilities in this realm, like, yeah. So it's basically me watching the wild animal chewing me up without having to experience the pain of the situation and the damage to my body, which is great when I'm actually chewed up. But if I run this response as a sort of a pattern to life situations, and I keep running it, it puts me in a very sort of disconnected state, because very often we can feel our body, very difficult to connect to emotions, very difficult to connect to other human beings, to have meaningful relationships. And in a way, it's a state which I work as a therapist, so I work a lot with this model, helping people out of those states. Like, and in a way, what's interesting really is maybe in the context. So this is a little bit like the metaphor of a car. Like, so if you imagine you're driving your car and you're pressing the accelerator, and the car becomes more and more, the revs go up in your car, and at some stage you shut down your car and you slam on the brake, yeah, but you don't let go of the accelerator, like, yeah. So basically your accelerator is fully pressed and the brake is fully slammed, like, yeah. And in a way, this domain is really that's what happens in our physiology. Because it's not like, oh, now we tune down the sympathetic response, calm everything down, and then we shut everything down. It's basically, it's an immediate response. Like when the threshold is reached, the brain shuts down our physiology and it washes all those endorphins on top of the accelerator pedal of the sympathetics fully pressed, like, yeah. And that's why, in a way, dealing with somebody in shutdown, if you've ever experienced it, I don't know if you ever will experience it, in a way, it's not to be surprised when they come from complete immobility into a hyperarousal state, because basically they're coming out of the freeze, and the nervous system in this way responds in a sort of a hierarchical order. So in a way, in order for you to become socially engaged and connected again, you may have to negotiate after not being able to feel anything and being completely numbed out, suddenly becoming incredibly aroused and activated. Yeah. And in a way, as a therapist, it's a really interesting domain to negotiate. Like, you know, I work as a touch therapist, so you're dealing with somebody lying on your table. You ask them, they can't feel anything in their body, like, yeah. And then all of a sudden, they start to feel incredible, a rush or pain or whatever it may be. So basically, to negotiate this territory, and also be aware, I think we've talked a little bit about when you go over somebody who has sort of moved into lockdown, they may shoot up like a rocket and punch you in the, or unmeaningfully hit you in the nose, like, yeah, because the body just all of a sudden shoots back into full fight flight mode, like, yeah. But the beauty about it is really, in a way, knowing about it and saying, okay, they are just protective reflexes and responses. And the key is really to come back into social engagement. Yeah. So the key is really helping people to meet intensity in their experience, learn to deal with it and self-regulate. So they're able to reconnect and engage that social regulatory network, which will naturally then create homeostasis again in their physiology. Cool. So now what I want to just maybe just to complete this, yeah, so this is a nice image, yes. So the question, how does this social network develop? Yeah. And really, this is the beautiful image. It happens in our infancy, yeah. So basically, babies have no capacity to regulate themselves. Like, they're nervous system is completely attuned to the nervous system of mom or caregiver, and they up and down regulate with the nervous system of their caregivers, like, yeah. So if the caregiver calms down, baby will calm down, unless there's of course something going on, a pain, but generally the best way to calm a baby, I work a lot with babies, is to calm the caregiving environment, yeah? And in a way, so what's basically the social nervous system is, what is the social nervous system interested, yeah? And basically what it does is it coordinates articulation, so facial expressions, in order to mirror the facial expressions of mom. It coordinates swallowing in order to be able to suckle, vocalization in order to communicate with the caregiving environment. It coordinates a tiny little muscle that adjusts the tension of our it's called the eardrum, to attune to the sound of mom's voice in the midst of all those other sounds in the environment. It coordinates the neck movements, yeah, so movements of the neck, in order to orient to caregivers. And it coordinates our viscera in response. So basically the activation and the metabolic state in relationship with all those activities that allow us to socially orient and communicate, manage the energy metabolism within our development, like, yeah. And if it goes well, we become well regulated, and if it doesn't go so well, we can end up being sort of chronically unregulated or finding it difficult to regulate in our life, like, yeah. And the beauty is a little bit, whatever we didn't receive, we can still make up, because those systems are still in flux, like, yeah. So really by connecting, by by making eye contact, by the tone of your voice communicating, by the invitation to orient, to safety in space, all those systems, all those neurological events, they all co-regulate and create a more regulated state. Yeah. And each one of those subsystems, whether you stimulate vocalization or you stimulate neck movement and orientation, they affect the whole system. That's the beauty about it. So the whole system is interconnected. And Stephen Porges, he uses this very particular muscle in the hearing mechanism to help autistic children to regulate better by stimulating this muscle with particular frequencies. Yeah. And he changes their heart rate and their metabolic state just by accessing a single little muscle within this complex system. Cool. I'm just gonna pause here for a moment. Wow, I went on. and just see, are there any questions?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes.
Yeah. This freeze state.
Yes, freeze.
Yeah. How long can you be in that state?
Yes. So it basically, in this freeze state, the system simulates death, really. Like, yeah, so because that's the biological aim, is to fake death as a last line of defense, because predators are more interested in animated prey. And basically, by faking death, we move very close to death in a way. Like, yeah, so basically, the brain is deprived of oxygen, yeah? And that's really why we cannot stay too long in this state. Like, so in the tonic immobile state, around a few minutes, the system will reset, yeah? Because otherwise you end up in, depriving the brain of oxygen. So usually we cycle between those states, like, yeah, so between hyperarousal and hypoarousal is usually, it's this sort of going from depression into hyperactivation in a way, in a sort of, it's one of the key features often if you have sort of post-traumatic stress disorders, like, yeah. Because first the metabolism sort of upregulates and then it shuts down and then it's switched on fully. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, good.
Joseph, I've got a question.
Yeah.
So the HRV.
Yes.
You know, in there's a lot of sort of sports articles, blogs, everything, yes, about increasing it amongst and with reasonably typical things, I think, you know, to do with sleep, for example, you know, sleep being one, or rest. In understanding all those things, do you feel they're missing something? Do you have a different insight into what can improve,
yes,
someone's HRV?
I think, I think basically HRV, and in a way, the way we improve HRV is really by vagal stimulation, like, yeah. And vagal stimulation is because we've talked about, okay, so when we breathe out, the heart muscle is squished, so there's more blood in the heart, and the brain compensates. So it switches on the vagal tone or the vagal pathway to the heart down regulates the heart. Yeah. So if you breathe long out breaths, every time you breathe out long, you're training the vagal break to become a little bit better, like here, in a way, like here. When you do the ice bath, so cold water is also, because it triggers this mammalian dive reflex, yeah, cold water on the face, and that also uses that pathway to slow down the heart. So it uses the vagus nerve to slow down the heart. Then humming is really good as well. So vocalization, yeah. It stimulates the vagal tone, and so they are all sort of the biohacks in a way. Yeah? But I think what's sort of missing in a way, and it's not missing, because if we, what always resonates with me is that sort of statement, Wim Hof method is all about connection in a way. Yeah. And I think good, healthy connection, yeah, is one of the key elements to enhance your vagal capacity. So we regulate better, you know, to be in your ice bath alone is one thing, like, yeah, but to have somebody kind and generous gazing into your eye and mirroring a slow breathing, there doesn't need to be words in a way, like, yeah. So this connection has a direct input into your capacity to upregulate to enhance the vagal tone, to downregulate your physiology in stressful situations. And I think that's the missing, in a way, you know, it's okay. I mean, all the hacks are amazing, but there's something about the social nervous system and healthy relationships and our capacity to offer it, like, if we know this, and that's what we're doing in a way, like, you know, where we are agents for people to help them to regulate better in stressful situations, okay? And that's true connection in a way. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, that's really, I find it really reassuring as well. It's really nice to come back to the importance of connections and social, and it just makes sense. I've got, if it's okay, I've got one more question.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who has his heart rate through prolonged stress is sort of stuck very high.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's really high. I mean, we can be doing some mild exercise or something and it's running at 180, 190. He's stuck there.
Yeah.
Do you find, and this is because he worked, we think, in San Francisco, high-end job, high intensity, 3 years, you know, big, well-known company doing its IPO, etc. In your experience with people who've gone into that sort of freeze mode at the top,
yeah,
you know, could he be there because his, you know, his accelerator's on? He's not living that lifestyle anymore. He's trying to address it. But have you experienced that in that area? Because now he's looking at keyhole surgery.
Oh, wow.
To take off one of the junctions, you know, stop some of the electrical sparks in his heart, which are maintaining it. Apparently it's quite normal amongst sort of high-end athletes.
Yeah. I mean, it's always like, you know, there's always, there's a pathology, you know, if there's a pathology, that's one thing really, like, you know, that's really the medical field. But very often it's not very well understood, this model, in the medical field, like, really, because they just look at the physiological manifestations and then they come up with the interventions, basically, like, yeah. But, you know, there is, I mean, if this system gets out of balance, you know, that's probably one of the biggest causes of problems, like, you know, in our modern world, really, like, you know, and it's hard to to re-engage, and it's possible in a way, unless, you know, I mean, I don't know what the circumstance, it's not always difficult to advise on individual circumstances, but, you know, in a way, the invitation would be to try to cultivate all those things, like, in a way, like using the breath is a really good tool, you know, sort of asymmetrical breathing, breathing sort of regularly with long out breaths. Breath retention is actually a very good tool, but not with the hyper arousal that we do, but just cold in a way. So breathing in lightly, breathing out, sort of the, I don't know if you know the work that the Buteyko method and the oxygen advantage. So Patrick promotes those tools in a way, like, you know, and they are really effective, like, yeah, plus therapy and learning to, you know, like a body-based therapy, you know, like somatic experiencing, something like this, to get a handle on, you know, the sensory integration of what's going on for him. And, you know, that would be my go-to sort of recommendation.
Yeah, I think that's good, because, like, we haven't sort of, I haven't done Wim Hof breathing with him because I really don't feel he needs a shot of adrenaline at the moment. You know, it's sort of, it would be a bit intense. So we're watching it. He's getting tests, et cetera, and we're wondering how to bring him in. But I think the more softer ways that you suggested are, you know, that sounds good.
I mean, I think only, you know, in especially for the breathing, like, in a way, starting gentle, really gentle, is really, I think, is the way. If he is really struggling with severe states, you know, basically calming breath work is really the key to start with, like, you know, and see if it works, like.
Yeah, thanks very much.
I mean, it's always like, you know, like, interventions are always, my thing is always trying everything what's available before I go, you know, like, it may not solve the issue, like, you know, that's always the thing with those interventions. And if there's a lot of baggage from past experiences, you know, and that's playing into the situation, you know, then for sure it's just find another outlet to say, hey, I'm still not resolved in a way.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I hope you're able to share the deck, and if not, it's in the film anyway. So,
but I'll share my presentation. Yeah, of course, yeah.
It's so good to go into this. So really, thank you.
Great, thank you. I think it's a nice model just to complement what we've learned, really. Like, you know, it fits so well with every tool that I've learned with Wim Hof. I just, yeah, of course, like, you know, it's so amazingly, you know, our week, it was all, in a way, practically, it was all about this, really. In my, at least from my experience. Cool. Anybody else have a question?
I have a question.
Hey, Bernhard.
Hi. Hi. So thank you very much. It was really very, very interesting. I have, well, you answered quite a bit of my question already when answering Mark. But could you still say a bit more to how to, like, use the knowledge of the vagal nerve on a in a practical way to regulate?
Yes. Yes. So how do we, is this from a personal, like, what can we do with it in a way, is the question, though. Is that it? Yeah. I think it's, in a way, everything we've learned, first of all, in the Wim, in our week, was all, you know, like, sort of making sure we stay connected to people, learning to recognize early signs of overwhelm. Like, actually, I'm gonna pull up. I've got one more slide. It's got a little. It's just our model that we use. Maybe I just call that up because it shows what I would. It's maybe a little bit too comprehensive for. Can you see my presentation? No, one sec. I need to share my share screen and go back and this one. Yes.
Actually, now I've just realized it's two questions I have. it's two ways how you could answer it. The yes. one is like how to use it in a workshop setting as an yes. instructor, and the other one is how to use it personally as a person.
Yes. So I think let's start from the instructor perspective. Yeah, in a way, because I've got the slide pulled up. So in a way, this is our model. So dissociation and activation, and how I would teach my students the framework around what they should aim for in their clinical setting. Like, yeah. So the first is really what's the most important thing is we need to make connection. Like, yeah. So this is really. And it's a little bit sometimes, you know, if you take the extreme form of a freeze state, it's not so easy to make a connection because the person may be very far away from that possibility. Like they may feel very disoriented, maybe even completely unresponsive to any sort of verbal engagement. Yeah. And the key, really the starting place is really we have to take control. Like, yeah. So being the safe anchor and, hey, I really need you to listen to me. We need to connect now. This is all about establishing connection. I want you to do this calmly, nicely, slowly, but with clear instructions, like, yeah, really important, like, yeah, because it's very, you'll be very far away from that person's awareness, really. It's like this distant instruction from through a frosted glass wall, like, yeah. And so you need to take control, and then it's about engagement. Can you look at me? Yeah. Can you open your eyes and turn your head and look at the room? Tell me about three things that tell you that this is a safe space here, like, yeah. Take a deep breath. Do you want to hold my hand and squeeze it really tight? Squeeze it and relax, yeah? So all those muscle tension and relaxation, orienting, getting them to vocalize eventually, or even just move their jaw. I mean, we've talked about squeezing the jaw open or bracing it open, yeah? Or squeezing into the trapezius. So you're actually stimulating parts of the social nervous system to come out of a stuck state, like, yeah. But then in a more nuanced way, tensing and relaxing muscles helps. Orienting people, orienting, mobilizing and grounding is a nice framework, yeah. Push your feet into the floor and feel your body. Yeah? Lift your bum off the floor and relax back down. And then, in a way, mirroring slow is really. Let's talk really slowly, like, yeah, just distracting them, asking them very, very simple, ridiculous questions. How did you get here today? Yeah. Did you drive or did you cycle or walk? Did you take the back road? Yeah. So engaging the cognitive functions again, because they may have all disappeared. Yeah. Memory and all of that. Yeah.
And so it's basically bringing the attention back into the moment.
Bringing the attention back into the moment. Exactly. Like, okay. Yeah. And key is really you are the, so if you think of the image of the mom looking at the baby, So, you know, what do we recommend to this mom to bring that baby back into regulation? And in a way, we are talking to that system in a way, like we are communicating with this, exactly this pathway that once upon a time, hopefully we would have experienced as babies. And we remember, yes, I hear this calm, gentle voice. They feel safe to me. They're not a predator, the environmental context, And so this is, I usually teach creativity is what we want here. It's not like a protocol, but being creative in being social, connected, and letting them know it's okay. They may have never experienced a state like that, and say, it's okay, I know this state, this is totally okay. Like, this is your nervous system processing some overwhelm. It's really good that it's coming out. I can work with you. You're in safe hands, basically. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Great. And then the second one is, how do I deal with it? Again, it's recognizing a shift in our state. So the earlier we recognize the signs of activation in ourselves, the easier it is to engage the social network and the vagal pathway. And for me, it's about grounding. Can I feel my feet on the ground and my bum on the chair? Can I take a deep breath? Can I lean against the backrest of the table, of the chair, and really feel that connection? There's something supporting me. Can I slowly look around this space and notice very slowly, is there anything in this space that tells me that this is a safe space? I like my cello, my plants, I've put them there, they mean something to me. I feel better already. And so the key is really, I always like this, in a way, if you think, well, what is mind in a way? And I like the working model for me is, mind is that which orients our perceptual systems, The body mind, there's the thinking mind and then there's the body mind. So in a way, if I look to the right, I hear, see, smell, feel more of what is there on the right. If I look to the left, I see, smell, hear, sense more of what is on the left. And in the world, this is really important, especially when we need to make sure that we are safe. Is the left and the right and behind me safe? The best way to tell the brain is to sense those directions. And that's what I do if I feel I'm out of sorts. And that's what also, if I feel my clients get activated, move your head really slowly, look around the space, know where you are, can you hear, smell, feel something that tells you this is safe? And this update always re-engages the safety networks, and it's very, it's very simple, but it's very effective as well. That makes sense?
Yes, very much. Thank you. Yeah. I think it's so simple that it's quite easy to overlook it.
It's so simple that it's easy to overlook. I would say it's like, in a way, it's so practical and simple and, of course, plausible. They think, gosh, why didn't I think of that before? But I think it's because we often try to create safety through thinking, and it's a fail. It never works, because basically if our physiology is aroused, our thoughts are also racing. So it hijacks all those processes. And we try to solve it by working it out through thought process in a way. and not through, hey, no, you know, I don't have to think this is a safe space. I need to know this is a safe space. How do I know? Oh, I look around. Ah, it's a safe space. Yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Can I add one more question?
Yes.
which maybe is a bit more of a philosophical question even. You're talking a lot about connection and good having good connection. What makes a connection good? What are the characteristics of a good connection?
I think for me, it's like a connection which mirrors safety. Yeah. And which is able to sustain a degree of impingements without changing form or without losing connection in a way, like, yeah. So in a way, if I, you know, if I can smile on the sunny day, that's great. If we smile together on a sunny day, it's great, like, yeah. But if we start to lose harmony or connection on the rainy day, then it's not so good. So in a way, this is for me, you know, as a therapist, in a way, I feel I need to be there for my clients in the midst of challenging experiences, which may also involve projections against me or even, you know, like, and all this in that context is good relationship for me, that's able to absorb it, digest it, and still mirror safety in a way. Does that?
Yeah.
And you know, in a way, that is a prerequisite. Is I need to feel safe. You know, that's the key as well. It's
yeah, sure.
Very difficult to hold somebody in safety if you're feeling out of sorts. You know, and in a way, I like this example, just out of practical experience. We are shivering after the ice bath, yeah. I don't know if I'm sure all of you have felt it at you know, different times. You know, and you have to regulate somebody else, like, you know, and most of your attention goes to your own, so you become more lonely in a way and less connected. And then still we need to connect, and if we manage, we both warm up. I felt this, like, you know, when my Jan warmed up in the ice bath, I also got warm, and he also got warm. So it's this sort of, I think a beauty is really, it's like, it's a shared treasure in a way, this social. It's not like, oh, I you know, I give you some energy or whatever, like, yeah. It's a shared treasure. If we tap into it, we all thrive, like, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Cool, thank you.
Can I, Joseph?
Hey, Ricardo. Good to see you.
I think okay.
All good.
Sorry, I didn't catch the beginning of the session, so I will look forward to see it after. But this afternoon I made this question regarding the polyvagal theory. Yes. And it's mainly because I work this concept mainly in parenting, okay?
Yes.
To deal with children and so. So it's very powerful, and there is a lot of tools. And most of all, there is a lot of information that we can use to understand behaviors and to understand the reactions to several issues, as you know.
Yes.
My point is in the going away from this subject that maybe is not so much interesting for everybody. So how do you use this knowledge that you have regarding this concept, all this polyvagal concept? How do you use it, for instance, before the workshops, just to prepare the participants to create a safe place and to create a space where they can trust you and they can trust each other. So is there any specific tools that you use to make sure that everything is on site?
I don't know yet. I haven't tried it. but I think it's more, I mean, we can set up a framework of safety, really, like, yeah. So it's in a way, once you know, that safety is the biggest question in the room at all times for our nervous system. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's always about every question in any space. The nervous system is always asking, is this a safe space or yep. not? Like, yeah.
Yep.
And if the answer is yes, this is a safe space, certain processes will bring us into safety mode. And if the answer is no, then we will become more protected. And in a way, that's the, for me, the pipe is really radiating safety in a way. It's one thing. And open explorative communication, you know, this is not just about creating superheroes, but also to create, in a way, super social communities.
Yeah.
That this would be my, that's my take on it, in a way, like, yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's all what we, I think we've done that so beautifully, like, you know, it's...
I'm just wondering, for instance, there is some things that I have some effort to avoid, like you were talking about when you don't know what it's behind you or if the room has a lot of space on your back and so yeah. the students doesn't know where is the end. So it's all things that connect your nervous system to create an area where he's always think about is not secure, maybe something happens from behind, so I'm not relaxed enough. That kind of things, like okay, to prepare the setup and to be aware, and if it's not possible, how to create this, like tell them to come to put up and to see the space. Like I really appreciate what you were saying some minutes ago, where you proposed to, okay, just look around and try to be comfortable with your ambience, with your space, mm-hmm. so that this also creates, and also look each other, because we know this vagal system works exactly. when you
yeah.
you realize when is danger or when is a social situation by the look is not mm-hmm. So is that kind of tips?
It's this exactly for? Exactly. I mean, I usually when I do, because in my cranial training and I lead meditations, and I always whenever we come out of the meditation, I always say open your eyes and catch a friendly smile in the room, like, you know, and you'll be surprised how many friendly smiles will start to immediately come into the space, like, yeah, and you know, simple things like this. It's yeah, I think it's creativity really also. It's I always like to think, okay, if we know the mechanism behind it, like, and how important those things are, how can I creatively explore it, and how do I create safety in a way, like, you know, how to set up and orient people to, wow, can we all acknowledge that this is a really safe place, yeah, that we are sharing, and even if things go haywire a little bit, we can still rely on that foundation that we can work it out and stay safe together, like, yeah. And I think it's a nice, you know, it's generally for relationships, it's a really good theory in a way. It's helped me a lot in my personal relationship, even, like, you know, to know if we lose connection, everything goes haywire in relationship. And if we keep connection, eventually everything starts to cohere again. Like it's like this, yeah. You know, and as you say, I mean, it's beautiful, you know, if you're able to do this for parents and children, you know, that's already setting up a good future for this world. Like, but very often we have to deal with situations where it's far from ideal, or where we didn't get what we needed through misunderstanding or whatever luck. Yeah. So even as adults, we still have this you know, yeah. we can still make up and recreate those connections, those social connections, and build this neurology. And yeah, it's nice. Yeah,
we use it a lot, mainly to explain why some bad behaviors, like parents used to call them bad behaviors, are really the honest and the real behavior.
Yeah,
because bad behaviors is most of the times is when they shut up, when they sit down, when they disconnect, and when they give up. They give up to show themselves, and they give up to appear and to have an opinion. So that's why we use it a lot to explain that parents in what kind of place they can put their own children when they just look for behavior and just look for obey and just look for this kind of rules and things. Mm. So it's like that.
Cool. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you.
I have a question. It's Lulu.
Lulu, how are you?
I'm good. And you?
Good. Very good. Yeah.
Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you, Joseph, for sharing this precious information, because there's a bunch of polyvagal theory around there. It's kind of hip now, but I never heard it explained like this. And your graphs are amazing too. That helps. But my question is more a question about safety within the Wim Hof method. Speaking of trauma, I guess you have worked with trauma. You work with trauma, okay? Mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah, you do. Okay. So let's say that we have a workshop and we don't know who's going to come. And we get maybe a few people that have severe PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
So we have them undergo the breath work and then the ice bath. But what would you say are severe signs of hyperregulation and signs of also maybe having them do something else that is not the ice bath or excessive breath work?
Mm-hmm. I think the ice bath, I wouldn't be, it's more, I think the breath would be my biggest concern in a way, like, yeah. Okay. And in a way, my personal opinion is like, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I'd really make sure that whatever, if I had somebody on the workshop, I would really make sure that they really take it easy with the breathing, like, yeah. And maybe I would probably adapt my whole workshop around them, like, yeah.
Oh.
I would, if I feel, you know, I would, because it's the, you know, it's a bit like if you have a loose cannon in the room or a number of loose cannons, or if you know that, if you feel that, you know, the worst thing for the whole group is if they all go off, like, you know, because in a way I think it's, so I would really slow things down tremendously and really nasal breathing, long out breaths, you know, still breath retention is perfect. But I would probably, I mean, I don't know, I haven't done it, you know, in that capacity yet, but I would probably adapt the whole group to make sure that those big needs are met, if I knew about it, like, of course.
Yeah, and then thank you. And then even I know, because as a teacher of mindfulness, I know that we've done some trainings in trauma sensitive mindfulness, and breath, we don't instruct mindfulness of breathing to a trauma survivor. Because a trauma survivor might have a difficulty with the perception of his breath, may have, let's say, an awareness of his breath that is actually something bad. So it might trigger trauma, actually, breathing. So of course, we instruct the mindfulness of sounds or something else. So in your experience, like, it's okay to teach, yeah, we have to adapt the breathing to the trauma survivor in a way, mm-hmm. right? Slow it down and stuff like that.
Yes. So I would say, I mean, I don't know, like, you know, I mean, I do different modalities. So I also do this sort of tension and trauma release exercise, DIE. Yeah? And I hold groups in that as well. And I mean, I think it always depends what, you know, it's okay to, if you have a lot of good assistants in a way that know how to attend to people who need attention, that's easy then, like, yeah. So in a way, because in a way, if something strong arises, those people need personal attention, like, yeah, you know, yeah. And so if I'm there, I have no problem doing, you know, if I can go over and I divert my full attention to, you know, it's no problem. But if I have to go away in a way and look after the whole group, that's always the challenge in a way. But I mean, also, sometimes we can be positively surprised how much actually people, you know, that sometimes if we can also be too careful in a way, like, you know, in a way that it's good to challenge and allow those processes to be met, as long as they can be regulated and you know, they don't go completely overboard.
Okay, thank you very much.
And you know, because I was like, you know, I was at the Wim's one weekend with Wim, and he did, like, I mean, we did a sort of 50-minute power breathing, and I think there was nobody. I was the only one who had done the method for more than 2 years. Most of them were the starters, like, yeah. And I know there was like six people. When I looked around, there were six people in a lockdown. Now, he had a lot of assistants, and I mean, I just peeked with what they're doing. I was curious, and they all did very well. Like, you know, they used basic human regulation connection. They did really well, like, without big theories, probably even. They naturally knew what to do, like, yeah. And in a way, yeah. So I you know, I would have been more careful, but when I saw it, it's like, okay.
Okay, just go with the flow and no plans, yeah. Like Wim says. Okay.
Very good points. Thank you.
Great. Cool. Yeah, it's late for most of you already, yeah?
Yes, I think I will just stop the recording now. Thank you, Josef.
Great. Thank you, guys. It was nice to connect. It's really nice, rich conversations as well. I love it.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thanks, Josef. Very good. Very good. Thank you.
Great. It's nice to be here.